Welcome to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust, covering car culture and the automotive world with Shane Osborne, Brady Wright, and Steve, the producer, Johan. Let's see what's up this week.
And this week, a very special December 25th Christmas edition. That motor that it happens at the beginning of the show, that's the actual sound of Santa's sleigh. He had it blown and ported and relieved and everything else.
Like the old cartoon.
The Beach Boys song.
Yeah.
Santa. Oh, yeah. That's cool.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, I'm Brady Wright. Master Mechanic Shane McOsborne is not here tonight because he is taking a Christmas break, and God love him for doing that. Steve, the producer, Johan is here, a man who always has a full stocking. Not necessarily anything other than his foot, but it is there. Back to the blacktop is first. We're checking out the latest happenings in the automotive world. Ho, ho, ho. What you got?
Well, my mind kind of just went off into a different direction.
I don't want to know what's in your stocking. No, don't tell me.
Well, people don't know because we don't have cameras in here. And when we do get the video, they didn't get to see the beautiful stockings that used to be draped over our microphones that were our...
I'd forgotten that.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, we used to have to tell our wives when we went home, you know, I spent all day, all evening talking into a pair of pantyhose.
That's right.
Because
that's right.
Broadcast people will get this. We were too cheap originally to have mics, you know, pop filters. So you can use pantyhose and just stick them over the microphone. It works just
fine. That's right.
I was 6 months. We did that.
Well, I did it for 12 years.
Well, I know. It was good. We have graduated. Much more high
profile. We've
got
a very professional studio here.
We still don't have anything but faces for radio, though.
Oh, I know.
What's up?
Well, I was just thinking that being it's close to Christmas, that...
it is Christmas.
Well, it is.
Close where you are.
Close, 25th, that's true,
Across the table, it's Christmas here.
and I thought we'd kind of skip the news because it's been kind of slow. Everybody's been off having fun with their family and all that good stuff.
Yeah.
And you told me that, you know, a while back we talked about some of the worst and slowest muscle cars. And I thought,
oh, yeah,
maybe
we've been playing with that for the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, we could talk a little bit about muscle cars.
Sure.
And, you know, what's interesting about muscle cars, if you've been listening to the show for any time, today's muscle cars, quite frankly, blow the socks off of anything that was back in the day.
Well, sure.
And what I did discover is by the 70s, early, mid-70s, and definitely by the 80s, the way they rated horsepower was differently.
Yeah. Yeah.
It wasn't just the block. Now it was the whole drivetrain and everything else.
Yeah, brake horsepower wasn't the deal at that point.
No.
Yeah.
But, you know, when I think back, we drove pretty damn fast when I was in high school in my buddy's muscle cars.
You can go fast, but not necessarily quick. I mean, here's a
classic.
And,
okay, we were racing against each other. So it was basically...
It's all relevant.
It was irrelevant. It was that era... Muscle car against each other's muscle car. It was in the mid-70s to late 70s.
Sure.
We were racing 60s muscle cars. And
even the new ones in the late 70s weren't anything really to write.
Well, nobody I knew had the money to buy a new one, so we were all driving, my buddies all had 60s cars.
Yeah, of course.
And hopped up and whatever. And they were quick for racing around town and street, you know, stop sign, country
you
roads.
You could drive dangerously in any car.
You could. But compared to today, no.
Well, here's a perfect example. If you talk
13,
about the Mustang.
14 to, second quarter miles in those guys' cars back in the day. Now,
a 10-second wasn't even heard of.
No.
Nobody was. Well, so here, you talk about the Mustang. The Mustang is an iconic muscle car today. The new Mustangs, they're gorgeous and they're fast.
And the handling today is so much better.
Marvelous.
Oh,
my
gosh.
And the Cobra, the Mustang Cobra was a huge, you know, step up from the basic Mustang. In 1978, the Ford, first off, I'm just going to say this kind of quietly, Mustang 2.
Oh, geez.
Okay. Yes. A sad chapter in the Mustang history. The 1978 Ford Mustang II King Cobra, which is kind of like, you know, I got an air scoop on my Pinto. it was the second generation. They started them in 1974. It was on the market for 4 years until 78. And in 78, despite the fact that it was just the butt of jokes, the Mustang II was actually kind of important in the Ford lineup. But what it meant was the introduction of a four-cylinder motor. They also did some parts sharings with some other Ford models, but here's the thing. There was one really interesting model, and it was the special edition King Cobra in 78. They knew that their 5-liter V8 delivered only 140 horsepower in the Mustang II. It was the performance. It was terrible. It was terrible.
My 77 Monte Carlo.
My Chevy, too, did better
than that. Was 150 horsepower.
Yeah. But they knew that if they dressed it up, put up some stripes and stuff, they could attract some more buyers. So they introduced the King Cobra, had a flaming snake on the hood. It had front and rear spoilers. It had a full body kit. And it was kind of the typical 70s factory custom car. At some point, they made it a 5.0 V8 with a 4-speed manual transmission, so they made a performance car out of it, so to speak. But it didn't help because the body kit stole the show. So today, car enthusiasts all over the place consider the King Cobra a collector's item, but not because of its performance with its lousy 200 horsepower. It's collector's item
I
because it looks cool.
I did know somebody who...
They were useless.
It was a gas station... A guy worked at a gas station, and he bought one of those.
Yeah, 78. That was the last year, by the way, of the Mustang II King Cobra. That was it. Because people finally realized it was just a looker and
If I remember right, he sold his Mustang to Rick, which was a 69 Fastback 350.
Ooh.
So he could buy the Mustang II.
Well, there's no accounting for taste. Well, another one, the Roadrunner has a long history of being a cool car. So do you know what the Roadrunner actually stooped to in the 70s, late 70s? Do you remember the Plymouth Volare?
Oh. Now, the Roadrunner. Okay, the Roadrunner was featured in the original first year of the Dukes of Hazzard, Daisy Duke,
right.
had one of those Roadrunners.
Right. Well, in 76, Plymouth introduced the Volare, and it was a little mid-sized car, four doors. They made a two-door, too, but it was kind of a twin to the Dodge Aspen. It was just a basic little commuter car. Well, so it would have been a really good platform for a muscle car, but the emissions stuff was killing them. So Plymouth tried. They put out the Volare Roadrunner. It had a 316 V8, which wasn't too bad, except that it was only 160 horse. And it basically didn't perform at all, but they jazzed it up with a bunch of looks. It had a full body kit. It had rear window louvers. Remember louvers on the rear window?
Yes.
And a spoiler and a graphics package. Yeah. It even had some version you could get a T-top with it, which was pretty cool back in the day. But it's another one of those things. They only made it until 1984 years, and it just, they died because it was a looker and not a performer. Now, if you can find one, they're kind of... collectible because there's not that many of them left. But just as a performance piece, it was a toad. I had a 76 Volare. There's a whole there's a whole other story around that. But I only had it because it was like cheap. My mother actually won it in a raffle.
Wow.
And they already had a car, so they gave it to me. I paid the taxes, $1,900.
Oh,
and
cool.
I got a car. But it was nothing flashy at all. And the idea that they would make a Roadrunner out of that, I remember them, but it was like, oh, come on.
Well, and Roadrunner had a short run and then they died. They were not around for that long.
Sort of too bad because it was a good idea.
It was. And they took the same body, made the Super B out of it.
Right.
And but it was the same body.
Yeah.
It started out, I think, as a Coronet and then it moved up to what it became. But the whole... Let's face it, 73 was the death knell of big, that's when 55-mile-an-hour speed limits went into place.
Yeah, they pushed it until about 76, 77, but it was over at that point.
The 55-mile-an-hour speed limits?
No, I mean making muscle cars.
No, but I'm talking about when they put in the 55-mile-an-hour speed limits. That came in the 70s?
Well, when
I can't drive 55?
I can't drive, yeah. Yeah, when
that was in the 70s, 77, 78?
Something like that, yeah.
It took forever to go someplace.
Oh, I know.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, that's assuming you drove 55. Although they were pretty militant about it. The cops were paying attention.
They were. It was a chance for them to make a lot of money.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. The good old Carter days of OPEC and stuff. And then, you know what happened? The light bulb came on and everybody realized there's heck of a lot more oil out there than they let on. It was just, it's just amazing.
It was a marvelous time for styling cues because there wasn't much in the way of performance.
There was some killer music coming out that time,
That's
though.
That's true.
Oh, my God.
Hey, glad to have you with us. Today's trivia question is coming up. We got a chat with somebody very cool, speaking of Christmas presents. All that and more on Horsepower, Chrome and Rust. Merry Christmas.
Listen and imagine. Yeah. It takes 5 seconds to send a text, and for those 5 seconds, you're driving blind.
Life is worth more than a text.
Stay alive. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, Noise, and the Ad Council.
Did you hear the news? Cartoons Magazine is back. Yep, those car-crazy comics from the past have returned in an all-new Cartoons Magazine, featuring some of your favorite artists along with a whole slew of new ones, all working together to bring you an entire magazine filled with one laugh-out-loud auto-related story after another. Bi-monthly issues are available directly through the Cartoons Magazine website at cartoonsmag.com.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hey, car enthusiast. Are you in need of a restoration and fabrication shop that turns old steel into rolling works of art? Then look no further than E-Company Customs Hot Rods and Restorations. E-Company Customs, that's Customs with a K, is the Northwest's fastest-growing restoration and fabrication shop, providing frame-off restoration, custom mods, upholstery, rust repair, hand-done metalwork, motor work, body and paint, and a whole lot more. To book an appointment, visit them at ecompanycustoms.com or stop by their shop at 15002 Suite A, Highway 99, Linwood, Washington. E-Company Customs, providing a stress-free experience to both new and returning customers.
This is Robert Durf with the Porsche Club of America Driver Skills Program. Thank you for listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. And just want to remind everybody that it's no fun unless it smells a little bit like burnt oil and burnt rubber.
My mind's out of gear, and my heart's in overdrive. I've everything to fear. I ain't never been more alive.
All right, we are back with the second segment of Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust on Christmas Day. Time for the windshield view, and this particular show, we're going to peer out the windshield, a really, really small windshield,
yes,
of one of the iconic Christmas gifts that ever occurred, Hot Wheels cars. And with us is Chris Palmer from Hot Wheels. Chris, thanks so much for stopping by and giving us a call today. We are really looking forward to this.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
It's great.
You bet.
I cannot tell you, you know, back in the day, getting Hot Wheels was just like an extra added, you know, VAT benefit for kids. I mean, you got some toy, but you always, like, there was two or three Hot Wheels in the stocking, and maybe there was a few under the tree or track pieces, because that was the other thing. You could have
right.
the cars, but getting the track, that was what it was all about.
Track, yes.
Yeah. How did you get involved in Hot Wheels? Give us some background.
So, as a person, of course, you know, anybody who was alive in the 60s and 70s went into the toy stores and the hardware stores, et cetera. And what Hot Wheels managed to do over Matchbox, which pretty much owned the marketplace in 68, what they managed to do was to take that kind of hot rod custom vibe that was going on in California, and it was super big with, like, sort of the forward-looking full-size car guys, but it just hadn't crept into toy cars at all. And Mattel managed to capture that vibe in diecast. And if you were a kid of that era and you walked into a toy store, you saw Hot Wheels with that flame logo on the top and the little bubble plastic holding the car, which you could see. And it had the hairy engine and pipes and mag wheels. And you're like, I got to have these.
That
and
was
you're
it.
Walking around with three or four in each hand.
Oh, yeah. And one of the all-time best logos of any toy.
Well, it is, and what's interesting, it was the paint. The paint was just phenomenal.
Yeah, that was the Spectraflame paints. That was one of their sort of custom ideas. Matchbox, you know, very popular, very cool cars, but Matchbox was very devoted to sort of production authenticity. I mean, they were very close to the production models, high level of detail,
right.
And Hot Wheels decided that if they were going to break into the market, they had to rebel against that. So, yeah, the custom, flashy, jazzy colors that you didn't see on cars on the road, at least not production vehicles, that was a big part of it.
Well, I'm looking at one.
Steve, just so that you know, Chris, Steve has brought most of his collection of Hot Wheels into the studio tonight. We're going to take some pictures and show because it's pretty cool. We'll put them up on the website.
Well, I got the Eldorado, and so I'm looking at this. I love purple. It's one of my favorite colors, and it's in purple. And I'm like, oh, this is phenomenal. And it's got the red wheels, of course, the red lines. And what I notice is I've got a couple Hot Wheels, the Dodora, that's a newer model because they have the new Hot Wheels logo on it. But all mine are either, say, 67, 68, or 69, and they're all the original Hot Wheels with the straight block type on it. And so I figure I've got some money sitting here, but I'm the kind of guy who's never going to give up to these things. They're well worth it. But I just remember going to Jaeger's. That was our little shop in Bellingham. It's actually still there, and that's where I saw them. And my buddies,
excellent.
My buddies and I were in there, and I'm like, I got to have one of these because I had a Matchbox, of course. And I went, I got to have this. And then you see the track. I got to have that.
Oh,
and
yeah.
The next thing you know, all my neighbor buddies, and, I mean, literally four or five of my different friends in the neighborhood all got Hot Wheels, got Hot Wheels tracks. And we started setting them up in each person's house. And then we would take turns going to each other's house and racing against each other. And so you'd be getting your car, who had the best running car. And it just became the thing as a kid. And in 67, I was 9. So I was born in 59. So 69, I was 10. So there you go. I mean, I just fell in love with them.
Absolutely the sweet spot. And you were talking about the, you know, the displays. And when you walk into the stores and you see that, those things too, as you can imagine, not just the cars themselves, but any of the Mattel displays that a hardware store or a toy store had, also crazy valuable, because they're tapping into exactly the memory that you might have had of Jaeger's or whatever, of what they were sitting in, what they were propped on.
Yeah, you know, talk to us a little bit. Let's go back. You wrote this book. It's the 50th anniversary of Hot Wheels. And where can people get it, by the way?
Boy, you know, in the online era, if you typed in, you know, Hot Wheels 0 to 50 or Chris Palmer Hot Wheels, it should pop right up. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, you should be able to get it very easily online. And any major bookstore should either have it on the shelf or be able to order it for you.
Excellent. And what I like about it is we'll take a picture of it, guys and gals, and it'll be posted. It also has a carrying case. And so part of my Hot Wheels collections, I eventually got a carrying case. I got the 48 one. And I looked at that when it came through the mail, and I went, wow, this has got a carrying case all of its own. So that was the graphics department did a really good job on this.
It was kind of a collaborative effort, this book. Mattel had some sort of end of the process input, and of course they had a lot of the assets, the super old promo photos and things like that. But like my publisher was Motor Books, and that was actually one of the things that Motor Books really wanted from the start of the project, was to get that carrying case in there. And yeah, people really seem to like that.
Well, it's a great piece of marketing for sure.
It is. And so talk to us a little bit about the beginning of Hot Wheels. Who was the idea behind this? Who was the inventor of Hot Wheels?
Well, credits has to go to Elliot Handler. So, you know, Mattel, M-A-T-T-E-L, Elliot is the L in Mattel. And he and his wife, Ruth Handler, at that time pretty much were Mattel. There was another guy named Matt Mattson. Matt was his nickname. And he's the first part of Mattel. And very, very early on, before they formed Mattel, Mattson and the Handlers were working together, making products out of plastic with an oven, plexiglass and things like that. And that slowly transitioned into making toys. And then Ruth had an out-of-the-ballpark hit with Barbie. And
right.
That helped to propel Mattel into the number one toy manufacturer in the world. And then in the mid-60s, Elliot and Ruth are grandparents, and they've got grandkids. And one of their grandkids' favorite toys is this little die-cast car, and he just couldn't stop playing with it. And Elliot finally stopped in his tracks and said, wait a minute, we are toys. We run Mattel. And our grandson's favorite toy is not made by us. And that was one of the inspirations for Elliot to say, we're going to make a toy car too. And Mattel hired the best people. They hired engineers. They went out to your Jaegers and all of the dime stores and toy stores that sold toy cars. They bought examples of all of them. They strapped them to little boards. They wheeled them around Mattel and looked at them from all angles and just tried to brainstorm what is out there now and what can we offer that will be so much different to that stuff that we'll just blow them out of the market.
You know, as a kid,
and that was happening. So that's Elliot. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, as a kid in high school, when these toys came out, I remember thinking to myself, this stuff is like pretty fully realized. You're used to seeing toys that are, you know, sort of basic, but these things, the detail was amazing. The paint was really, really cool. And what got me most was the displays. I mean, whether you went to a hobby shop or a toy store or a hardware store or wherever, the display was something. It was like the front of a movie theater. Mm-hmm. You know, you'd sit there and go, wow.
Yes.
You could just look at the display for a long
yes.
time. Clearly, I mean, I didn't think about it at the time, but later on you go, these guys were merchandisers way before they were toy makers, I think. They must have had that gene because it sure drew you in.
I hate to jump in. We're going to be running out of time, and I know there's a little bit of delay between your phone and our system tonight. But that, you know, that's okay. Everything's working out fine. But Chris, what we want to do is bring you back on the other side. So hang with us, folks. We've got more of the show, I'll have to ask you what you think my school bus is worth. So.
Oh, there you go. All right, well, stick with us. We'll be back with Chris Palmer and another story from the old Carnut books. That and more on Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, how would you like to have a chance to win a fully restored, four-on-the-floor, red 1965 Mustang? Well, you can. Linwood Rotary is raffling off this fully restored 65 Mustang at a car show near you. Chance to win this car is just $10 per raffle ticket. For more information and to find out where the car will be displayed, visit rotaryoflinwood.com/car-raffle. rotaryoflinwood.com/car-raffle. Proceeds will go into funding local charities.
Attention men under the age of 35. You know what really impresses the ladies? When a guy has a few drinks and later gets pulled over for buzz driving. That could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. There goes let's grab dinner and a movie. Oh, I know. You drive more carefully when you're buzzed. You've proven that hundreds of times. A woman admires that kind of confidence. And you've practiced how to speak if a cop does pull you over. Slowly, clearly, and politely, like, good evening, officer. A woman admires that kind of foresight. And what woman doesn't find it adorable that you call it buzzed even though the law calls it drunk? You could kiss $10,000 goodbye, along with any chance of having a girlfriend. Because nothing says, I'm a catch, more than a guy who lives in his parents' basement and calls it my place.
Buzzed, busted, and broke. Because buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
More Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust after these messages.
Looking for a job worth talking about? Teaching is creative, collaborative, and intellectually challenging. See why teachers have better work stories at teachdfw.org and learn more about becoming a teacher.
1 in 7 Americans will struggle with addiction during their lifetime. Want to know how you can help? Go to heretolisten.com for tips and tools to help turn addiction around.
Hello, this is Zach with Cascade Campers. You're listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust.
Vehicle City. Well, speaking of Vehicle City, we are talking about some extremely cool vehicles, namely Hot Wheels, with a guy named Chris Palmer, who put together the 50th anniversary of Hot Wheels, 0 to 50 Hot Wheels. It's a beautiful, beautiful collector book. It's just, how many pages is this thing? It's like, Brady, what does it look like?
160 pages, if you count the pictures on the back.
There you go.
And I like the full title, by the way, From 0 to 50 at 1/64 scale.
I love it. What a great idea. Great. So, Chris, on the other side, we were talking about what you thought my school bus might be worth. And
Steve has one of the school buses.
You know, I don't. Well, there's a lot of factors that would go into really what any Hot Wheels would be worth. I'm not knowledgeable about the school bus being sort of a super rarity, most sought after. I don't know too many stories of someone hunting to the ends of the continent for the school bus. But an interesting fact about the school bus is that, you know, Hot Wheels is looking at the 1/64th scale to make all of their cars. That's what they came to their success on. But of course, a bus is one of the few vehicles that's actually off by a large margin. That school bus is not actually 1/64th, because to keep packaging and everything comparable, they had to scale the school bus down a lot more. And it's actually some kids who discovered that, because one of the uses that one of the many uses that get made of Hot Wheels is teachers have discovered that they can teach various basic measurement and physics and science principles with them. So measuring Hot Wheels, you know, putting 64 in a row, and that's how long an actual car should be, and 64 side by side, that's how wide an actual car should be. And they were playing around with that, and they had the school bus, and they started doing measurements with that, and the kids said, "This is not 1/64." No.
Yeah.
Well,
to be honest,
I bought it because I was really into drag racing as well as a kid. I'd get all the books from the library and watch it on TV, Wild World of Sports. And I saw this and I went, that is a killer funny car. And I just loved it for that fact. It doesn't matter if it's anything of more value than what it is to me. But speaking of value and collectors, when did Hot Wheels really start becoming, because they have whole conventions now, there's a Hot Wheel collectability books out there, guides and everything.
Not websites and Facebook pages.
Yeah,
too.
Exactly. So when did that really take off?
A pretty good answer for that question is, you know, you're always going to have people who are sort of collectors in their soul. And there were Matchbox collectors before there were even Hot Wheels cars. And so the people who were doing that probably started picking up Hot Wheels and keeping them in the original packaging and things like that. But one of the known explosions in collecting is pretty much markable on the calendar as one generation after 1968. So as you start getting to the end of the 80s and into the early 90s, what happened was the first generation of kids raised on Hot Wheels started having families of their own. They were looking for toys for their own kids to play with. They went upstairs to the attic at grandma's or whatever. They got out their Hot Wheels, and an interesting thing happened. Their own children fell in love with them, and they re-fell in love with them and started buying them themselves. So that's a pretty good number for you, late 80s, early 90s.
You know, that makes total sense.
Yes.
And let's face it, anything that's fun as a kid is probably still fun as an adult. I mean, just the track layouts alone, they were fun to put together as a kid, and helping your kid put them together just so that they could see how each thing works. There's a picture on page 94 that is stimulating this thing. It's actually a picture of a track layout on the wall with a slide and a bunch of stuff, and it actually goes around a corner, the inside part of a corner. And it's a great picture, and I recognize a lot of the elements in it, and thinking to myself, you know, building something like that in your house would, you know, for your kid, would be phenomenal. I remember seeing pictures of it on TV and the commercials and stuff and thinking, I'll never be able to afford all of that.
Right.
But I did have one of the loops, the loops.
Right.
We did that. We also, I'm ashamed to say this now, but I will say it. We destroyed any number of Hot Wheels cars by, you know, putting firecrackers in them and setting them on fire with lighter fluid, because that was fun. You know, kids are sort of destructive by nature. But when I think back on it now, it's like, those things are probably worth a couple of bucks these days. But
right.
it was worth it to us to do it just, you know, in the spirit of being idiot kids, which I can't imagine how many of those things went away.
I would venture to say that most kids, certainly I did, and all the kids I grew up with went down that path a little bit. They got hit with hammers. They got jumped over something that they couldn't possibly survive, you know,
yes,
off a cliff, or they got shot with BB guns.
Like the lawnmower.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's going to happen.
Well, and what's interesting is I was at my 40th high school reunion. I was talking to Tori, and we were just chatting about back in the kid days, and He goes, remember when, I go, I remember when we did Hot Wheels. I go, oh, yeah, we did it down your two-story, you know, stairway. And he goes, do you remember the, I remember when we took and we put all the track and we run it out the top of my two-story window outside down to the backyard. And I go, yes. I was there, Tori. I remember that. We were launching those things.
Yes.
Oh, I don't know how many feet they would come down, they would hit, and they would be off. And that was Evel Knievel days. So I was doing that with my bicycle, and we were doing it with Hot Wheels. And yeah, and some of those cars got pretty beat up. I mean, there's no doubt about it. But
well, that's kids. That is kids.
I mean, and interestingly enough, I did have the track. I had some corners. I had the little push down power thing that you push. They had one that was battery operated. I was hoping
the launcher kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. And what you do is you start off the top. You hit the two starters. They come down the hill. Then they start losing speed, and then they hit the power starter, and it relaunches them. And I wanted the battery-operated one. And then my folks, they didn't want to spend that much money. And it was a Christmas present. And I got the two-handled push-down kind with the rubber band in it.
Here it is.
And you know what? The two-handled push-down worked just fine. And that shot me through. We were able to go through another loop and out the other end. And so you could continue by adding these little power things. You could actually add more length to your track.
Oh, it's
and
here.
Keep it going.
There's a whole section, Steve. I'm just looking at it. There's a whole section here on tracks and cases.
Yeah.
The timeline of when all these things came out. And I'm looking at this one, this 1981 set right here, the Stow and Go. I had that one.
Oh, wow.
And
okay.
Now, I was 31.
Yes.
But it was cool. I mean, it was like, okay. I don't know why, but it's just a thing that you did. This is memories of a misspent youth. I think I got them because I couldn't afford them when I was
a kid.
How very cool.
So Chris,
but part of,
go ahead.
Can I just say one thing about that? Well, it popped into my head.
Yeah.
Part of kind of what you're talking about with different tracks and different machinery, et cetera, there is still handler genius in that. Ruth and Elliot, when Ruth launched Barbie, you know, obviously there were gazillions of toys in the world.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But their deal at Mattel was, let's create a world.
Yes.
Let's create apparel. Let's create accessories. Let's always offer something that can expand the child's imagination and enjoyment.
Sure.
And then when they did Hot Wheels, it was the same. You know, Matchbox, no tracks, no power launchers, et cetera. But
right.
Hot Wheels, all these well-recruited minds are just sitting there day in and day out going, how do we make it bigger and better and more fun? And that all that stuff is out of that growth that you're talking
about. Well, yeah, and that's it's kind of the genius of Mattel
I'm
convinced, having nieces and grandnieces now, I'm convinced that the Barbie whole thing, which is still gigantic, is the reason that this American Girl doll thing exists.
Yeah.
They took a look at Barbie and said, oh, we're gonna make it high end. And you know, creating a world that the toys can exist in, that's genius. That is absolute genius.
Well, and one of the things I didn't note that you hadn't mentioned in your book, you did the later version, but there was a 60s very, Hanna-Barbera cartoon style, and it was a Hanna-Barbera, but there was I think it lived for 1 year, maybe 2 or 3 years, it was the Hot Wheels Saturday morning cartoon. And as a little kid, I watched that, and I just loved it, and I fell in love with the Woody and all that. So they would be driving the cars that you actually had. That didn't get in the book. Is there a reason why it didn't?
Check on page 122, second paragraph. I did mention it there.
Oh, okay. I read almost the whole thing. Okay. Very good.
Well, sound
and
like
vision.
A couple sentences, but yeah.
There it is. Yeah.
I agree. That was cool. I probably caught mostly that on reruns, as my recollection of that show was that a competing toy manufacturer complained about the show and basically said, look, this whole thing is just a half hour long commercial for your products. It really, whatever. And so I don't know if I believe that, and I don't know if Mattel believed it either. But in fact, they probably smiled about it because they're like, "Yeah, we're going to sell our products."
Yeah, and that was the point, wasn't it? I mean, yes.
Well, and you know, you know what was interesting about Mattel is not only did the Hot Wheels take over, but they came out with the Thing Makers, and so they had the creepy crawlers, and then the gummy bear versions of the creepy crawlers, and you as a kid had this little electric thing, and you're plugging it into the wall, and you're sticking it in there, and you're heating up plastic and baking it. And there was no way that they'll sell anything like that today. But back then, you got your goop, you put it in there, and I loved it. My friends and I would just play for hours making that. And then they came out with a gummy bear version. You squeeze it in there, and you had thing makers out of gummy bear, same molds, everything. Just amazing.
And gummy bear stuff was pretty good. I'd have been 6'2" if I hadn't eaten so many of those things.
You know what I'm talking about?
Of course.
or maybe 5'4".
Maybe, yeah.
Well, that was because you ate the rubber ones instead.
Those weren't supposed to be eaten? Really?
No.
I didn't know.
So just back to the Hot Wheels, Chris. Estimate how many hours you put into this, because you must have put in a load of time on this.
Boy. You know, I think I spent about 7 months writing it, and I don't have a feel for that.
Well, that's okay. I mean, seven months, and that was gathering all the information. Did you get to go to the factory in China at all?
I talked to them. I got to talk to them. Like I talked to the guy who runs the factory in Malaysia.
Okay.
That's their main production plant. And that was very cool. He was a cool guy. As I recall, I had to call him at some, you know, preposterous middle of the night hour for it to work for him.
Right, right.
But he takes his job seriously. And then like everybody else in Mattel, just deeply immersed in the product, loves it, loves to talk about it. Really fun conversation.
Now, how many people do they have in the United States working for them, as compared to how much they have offshore working for them?
Boy, I don't remember those numbers.
Okay.
I probably had those numbers at hand when I was writing it, but I don't remember it. I think the number of people who work in the big plant in Malaysia, I think about, there's a couple thousand who work there, maybe 2,000.
Right.
And there's, you know, there's tens of thousands probably in the U.S., but I'm not sure. And then there's the question of, you know, when you're talking about distribution and all the people selling it and coordinating things, et cetera, they just got operations all over the world of one scale or another.
Yeah. When they launched here in the United States, did they also, I remember they had the toy store, toy conventions. There were other countries like England and other places that were also coming on board with them at about the same time they launched here in the United States, right?
Well, that sounds, I think it was fairly contemporaneous, yes.
Right.
And then initially they were producing in, you know, in California and in Hong Kong.
Yes.
And there's some differences between those cars that can be valuable. But definitely it's very much a Ruth and Elliot thing to shoot, you know, to look global for their product. So you'll find there's variations in the cars depending on where they're from. And private corporations can sort of hire a small lot of production and put their logos on them and things. It's there's just so much variation wherever you look with the toys. And, you know, I suppose you can talk about the packaging in different languages and things like that. If you're a collector or something, there's endless variations to collect with Hot Wheels.
Yeah. Speaking of packaging in different languages, one quick one. Were there any Hot Wheels produced specifically for an extra, a separate company? This is kind of going to be the last question we're going to ask. Do you know that there was any products that were made like just for Canada or just for England or so on?
Oh boy. Just for a particular country, like this is a Canadian one. I'm sure the answer is yes, but it probably depends on how you, because they might have certain differences with respect to what they require for their labeling.
Right.
Or
well, maybe that's
like
a topic you can toss in for the second book.
Yes, and you know what, Chris, we have run out of our time, and I just want to say thanks so much. And folks, go out and look up 0 to 50
at 1/64th scale.
Hot Wheels. Chris,
I'm sure you get it on Amazon.
Being on with us.
Yeah, thanks a ton, Chris. It's been great talking with you.
Thank you guys too.
Okay, bye-bye.
Listen, as a hiring manager, I've got to tell you, the best job candidate isn't always the typical candidate. Sometimes they're a grad of life.
Meet the grads of life. Young adults of unique determination and experience. An ideal fit for your company in an entry-level position, internship, or mentorship. They might not have every qualification you typically look for, but they're exactly who your company needs.
Sometimes the best candidates aren't the ones you're used to.
Go to gradsoflife.org to learn how to find, cultivate, and train this great pool of untapped talent.
Hey, car enthusiast, are you in need of a restoration and fabrication shop that turns old steel into rolling works of art? Then look no further than E-Company Customs Hot Rods and Restorations. E-Company Customs, that's Customs with a K, is the Northwest's fastest-growing restoration and fabrication shop, providing frame-off restoration, custom mods, upholstery, rust repair, hand-done metalwork, motor work, body and paint, and a whole lot more. To book an appointment, visit them at ecompanycustoms.com or stop by their shop at 15002 Suite A, Highway 99, Linwood, Washington. E-Company Customs, providing a stress-free experience to both new and returning customers.
Stick around. We'll be back after these words.
When it comes to saving money, don't act like a baby.
Goo goo gaga.
Be the boss and make a budget.
I'm the boss, baby.
You're the boss of me.
I am the boss of you.
Are not.
M2.
Are not.
M2.
Need a little help?
Aren't you going to do any work?
I'm very busy delegating.
Create a personalized savings plan.
We can share.
You obviously didn't go to business school.
And get other tools and tips at feedthepig.org. Brought to you by the American Institute of CPAs.
This is Elton Roundhill and Shane Osborne with E-Company Customs in Linwood, Washington. You're listening to Horsepower Chrome and Rust.
This is Cody with Bow Wow Air Cooled. You're listening to Horsepower Chrome and Rust.
This is Robert with Bonbrenner Motorsport. You're listening to Horsepower Chrome and Rust.
Welcome back to the fourth segment of the show. This is Cars Confidential, where we share all kind of hot rod stories. And this week, Brady has a very cool story.
This is a really cool story. And
kind of like the weather we're having right now.
Yeah, I hope that some of you got the old Car Nut book for Christmas. And if you just opened it up, you can read along with us. This one's from book two, and it's on page 251, and it's called Commando Power. It's by Mike Goodwin. So by some off chance, should you ever find yourself in Tacoma, Washington around the middle of December, locate 6th Avenue and drop into the Golden Sail Diner. Now, this is not a foodie tip. They don't serve any real noteworthy food at this location. It's like a diner that can be found in any number of other locations. They're just serving up good old home-style grub, and breakfast is available all day long. So as you enter, you'll notice a set of booths to the right, and to the left is a typical long counter service area with a row of tables further on to the left, and in the back there's a small room that's used for private parties or meetings. This room is of interest because for the past 30 years, a small group of aging gentlemen has gathered here to relive their youth. Stories rarely change. The outcome of any race is always the same, with the storyteller winning the race hands down. In their youth, 6th Avenue was the place to cruise in Tacoma, and stoplight racing was their passion, so these guys tend to forget how fast the cars really were, and speeds do seem a little unrealistic to the person hearing the story for the first time. 300 miles an hour? No, I don't think so.
And we were just talking about that in the first segment, yeah. About how fast we thought we were doing.
So for those up on the local social scene, you'll note a retired appeals court judge, a state representative, a couple of businessmen, and one of the best ambulance chaser lawyers the area has ever seen. Actually, they all look like what they are, middle to late 60s guys that get together to hash out old stories and have breakfast. The December 2013 gathering had a twist in the form of a surprise guest by the name of Lois. A surprise, as this gathering has always been pretty much an all-male enclave. Seems a couple of people had invited Lois just to make sure that yours truly got a good dose of humble pie early in the day. After exchanging social greetings and a few warm hugs, Lois settled into a chair nearly directly across the table from me, and it didn't take long for the question about commando power to surface at the table. You see, Lois had been known to slam a few gears in her little Jeep, and she'd had no problem holding her own. So one evening many years ago, as a bunch of us sat in the parking lot of a burger place, she showed up in a 64 Sport Fury. It was a nice-looking car for the most part, but it was a boat all the same. We started talking about the car, and Lois indicated that it was pretty quick. I looked at the front fender and spotted the emblem that declared it was equipped with a V8 engine. Smiling, I figured a whopping 318 two-barrel maybe resided under the hood, so my alligator mouth began to overload my hummingbird backside once again. It wasn't long, and the two of us were exchanging verbal snipes while the other folks stood around and watched. It probably would have ended there until Lois declared that the Plymouth had something called commando power under the hood. Of course, with a lightweight Ranchero packing a 66 289 V8 with a 4-barrel, there was no reason for me to worry about commando power. Her sled even had full-size wheel covers that held some dorky-looking 3-spoke attachment. "Put it on the street," was my battle cry, which drew a round of cheer from the guys. So to her credit, Lois didn't miss a beat. She simply reached into her pocket, pulled out a keys, and headed for the Plymouth, so we lined up at the first light. Headed towards the Tacoma Narrows Bridge, I slipped the Ranchero into low and started a little power brake action. I was planning my entire victory run as I waited for the light to turn green. Not too much gas at the launch, let the RPM climb, and then get second and hammer the thing. The light went to green, and I smiled as Lois had failed to power brake that heavy old Plymouth at all. About mid-intersection, I grabbed second, and just as I was going to slam the go button to the floor, I heard it, just off to my left. This big whoosh, and a huge white whale went past me. The next three lights were repeats of the first as Lois took me to the woodshed, stoplight after stoplight.
This is 2013.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
We were at the... Well, the story is 2013. It was before that. We were at the light, the final light. She gave a hand signal. She'd run the bridge against me. Sort of a if-you're-man-enough type of challenge. Well, not a problem, as I knew that this time I would take her on that long run out over the Tacoma Narrows Bridge. The light turned green, and I gave the light... I gave the light in the rear Ranchero a little more gas than I should have, and it fishtailed a time or two, and then, once under control, I dropped the hammer again. And by now, the taillights of the white Plymouth were moving away quickly. I pressed on, but soon the clacking of valves gave me a cause to look at the gauges that were mounted under the dash. The water temperature was way up in the red, and the oil pressure was dropping like a rock. It was time to back off and just kind of run at the posted speed limit. On the other side of the bridge, I pulled into the weigh station, as was customary with racers, to review the race. Lois was kind enough to open the hood on her white sled and show me what commando power really was. Her dad, a tinkerer from way back, had put a 361 cubic inch cross ram engine in there with 2 4-barrels and the sleeper Fury. It was no wonder that Lois had such confidence. Being the lady she was, she offered me a chance to try again on the return trip to Tacoma, but I declined that opportunity. So here I sat with several of my buds, and Lois came some 46 years later, reliving one of the worst street race beatings I ever received. Thanks a lot, guys. Can we choose someone else for next year?
Oh, it was 46. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Was that much
earlier?
Well,
I mean, this 2013, so when was that?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
60s.
And we all have had one of those losses. I think it's great because, first off, street racing, yes, it's illegal. But, you know, people, we did that. We did that stuff.
We lived.
And it was fun. Mostly it was harmless. Occasionally somebody got a ticket, but mostly nobody got hurt. And it's part of, you know, the romance and the love of the hobby. And who in the world doesn't like those stories? Which is why the Gold Car Nut book is, in fact, a huge success and continues to be. Amazon's got them. You can get all three or one at a time if you like. And if you got one for Christmas, God love you, because that's just a marvelous Christmas present to find underneath the tree.
Well, you were talking about a Willys a little bit earlier. She came in with a Jeep. And my buddy Bert, his dad was, he had made some money because he had inherited the Bellingham Marina.
Oh, nice.
And he sold it. And he was into race boats and drag racing and all that kind of stuff. And so he had a lot of different cars. But they had found his barn. Literally, it was a barn find. It was a 69 Chevelle SS 396, orange with a black vinyl top, Hurst 4-speed, the whole bit.
Nice.
And we had a lot of fun. But his dad also had a 69 El Camino, which is when I fell in love with El Caminos.
Of course.
Well, another thing that
is... That was a good year for him, too.
It was. And another thing that his dad had was a 60s, some era in the 60s, Willys Jeep.
Okay.
Well, he had outfitted with some very large tires and a 289 Ford small block.
That was a popular conversion.
Well, there were times when we would be at the old Herphy's hamburger joint in Bellingham.
I remember it well.
And that was kind of like the hangout there, right off of Holly Street in Bellingham.
Oh, yeah.
And there were times
when... And the Hefty Burger was
Oh, that was my favorite.
That was the meal of choice.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah,
that was my favorite. And so under a buck, you could have fries, a Hefty, and a Coke. I mean, it was a killer price. Anyway, one night, he comes in there, and he lowers a little bit of the air in those tires.
That was also.
And he started romp. Next thing you know, he had the front end right off that little Jeep and back down on the ground. And we're like going, no way. And
he weighed 1,600 pounds.
I know. What a great combo. What a great combo. Quick off the line. Didn't, couldn't go long distance because it was low geared. But Unfortunately, we used to do, he also had a accident with that. There were some, well, I would call logging roads up above Lake Whatcom. And if anybody knows where Lake Whatcom is, there's a lot of hill country, a lot of logging up above that. And we would go up there in the night and in our cars and drive around and park and do whatever. And one night he was up there and, he went off the cliff.
Went where the road wasn't?
Yes.
Yeah.
And next thing you know, I'm over at his house and this thing's kind of got a big old crunch into the side of it.
It's lawn art now.
Yes, it is. Well, it actually got repaired and fixed.
Really?
But it was like you lived through that. Oh, my gosh. And
well, anybody who knows, Jeeps were neat little cars and still are, but not something you want to be in a crash with.
No.
Not a lot of, I mean, that's why they put roll cages on so many of them, because.
I just think, but yeah, that was, I also took, in the daytime, I would take my little Mazda 1800, and I would go up on the logging roads.
Sure.
And I would just do, before it was, you know, we were watching George Plimpton's Baja, you know.
I'd totally forgotten George Plimpton.
I was doing the Baja thing with my little Mazda vehicle up in the logging roads. And then in hindsight, I look at it and I go, I could have went down the cliff, down into a ravine, and no one would have found me.
Never find you again.
For weeks.
Ever.
Or ever. And I'm like, okay, God was looking out for me. Because I was not looking out for myself.
No.
And, you know, my kids live a protective life, and I think there's a good reason for that.
Well, it lets you sleep at night.
Oh, yes, it does. my wife says, I'm worried. I go, you don't know anything about worry.
Boy, that is the truth.
Well, there we are. We're going to come right back with the last part of our show, and we have a great trivia question for you this week. So stick with us. We'll be right back with more of the Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust Show. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, how would you like to have a chance to win a fully restored four-on-the-floor red 1965 Mustang? Well, you can. Linwood Rotary is raffling off this fully restored 65 Mustang at a car show near you. Chance to win this car is just $10 per raffle ticket. For more information and to find out where the car will be displayed, visit rotaryoflinwood.com/car-raffle. rotaryoflinwood.com/car-raffle. Proceeds will go into funding local charities.
I adopted Bento in 2010 from a shelter. A lot of people know him as Keyboard Cat.
That's just one adoption story that started at a shelter. Visit theshelterpetproject.org to find a pet near you. Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
Hang on till right after these messages.
One in seven Americans will struggle with addiction during their lifetime. Want to know how you can help? Go to heretolisten.com for tips and tools to help turn addiction around. A public service announcement brought to you by the Ad Council.
Did you hear the news? Cartoons Magazine is back. Yep, those car crazy comics from the past have returned in an all-new Cartoons Magazine, featuring some of your favorite artists along with a whole slew of new ones, all working together to bring you an entire magazine filled with one laugh-out-loud auto-related story after another. Bi-monthly issues are available directly through the Cartoons Magazine website at cartoonsmag.com.
I'm jumping in with my clothes on!
Most party fouls are pretty dumb, but if you decide to drink and drive underage, you could lose your license and your freedom. Learn more at ultimatepartyfoul.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
This is Robert Durf with the Porsche Club of America Driver Skills Program. Thank you for listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. And just want to remind everybody that it's no fun unless it smells a little bit like burnt oil and burnt rubber.
Help us if you can. You're an El Camino. El Camino man. Only you can understand.
Only you can understand. But this is the fifth and final segment of our Christmas show. It's Around the Wheel. We talk about all the events and rallies and stuff that happens relating to cars, and this week's trivia question is a Merry, Merry Christmas to Rob Conrad from Pocatello, Idaho, scenic Pocatello, home of the largest potato factory on the planet. actually, it's not, but it's a nice town. I've been there. Anyway, Rob came up with the winner of where the world's first drive-in movie was ever put up. The first drive-in movie ever to open, this is our question from last week, was opened in Camden, New Jersey.
New Jersey?
Camden, New Jersey in 1933.
I was thinking Kansas, but Camden, New Jersey.
Can you? Well, you know, Camden is actually a pretty urban sort of joint.
Right.
And college town, too. So kind of made sense. 25 cents. 25 cents.
I'll tell you what.
And it was a triple header.
I love drive-in movies.
Look at this picture. I want to put this on the website, but yes. It's too small. Just look at that picture right there.
Oh, my God!
Isn't that cooler?
That is cool. It's,
the headline on the screen says, drive-in theater, get in your car, sit in your car, see and hear movies, 25 cents.
Wow.
Come on.
And that's probably when they were serving beer, too.
Well, in New Jersey, they might have been. Anyway, Rob Conrad scores big. Portello, thank you for doing that, Rob. I appreciate it. And you, too, yes, you, too, are the winner of your very own coveted bucket of horsepower, chrome, and rust, barn fine dust, which if you sprinkle generally on your car, it will increase the value by fourfold because people will think you found it in a barn. This coming up week, we got a marvelous question. This one's for New Year's, so kind of stick with us on this one. The very first standard production key starter, okay,
ooh,
was put in a car. But what was, okay, so your question is, what auto was the first one to use a standard production key start system? Now,
right,
people had key locks before this, but actually by the factory, you have a key ignition. Because used to be you had to put the pedal you stick on the floor.
Right.
Right. So if you know what it is, what model and what year, that's very cool. Please get with us on Facebook. You can answer directly on the HCR Facebook page. You can send us an email at horsepower, contact us at horsepowerchromeandrust.com. Or you can send a carrier pigeon or drive by and, you know, throw a rock through the window. Either way, be lovely. And you too can hear your name on the radio sometime after we actually produce the show.
Now, here's a little trivia question.
Yes.
Did you ever watch the movie Double Indemnity with Fred McMurray?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, there's a spot
classic
where in
film noir,
he pulls up to a drive-in.
Yes.
He orders a burger and a beer.
Yes, I'm sure.
They drive in, drinking a beer, there in your car.
Yeah, there were drive-in movies.
But
here,
that wasn't a drive-in movie. But that he just went to a
oh,
drive-in.
You like a drive-in?
Drive-in.
Sure.
Well, and they served him, and this is like in the 40s, and they put a beer there, and he drank a beer, and then they took it away.
Different states, you know, had different liquor laws. Now there were never drive-ins. You could never buy alcohol in Washington State at a drive-in.
No,
but you could in Idaho. And there was a drive-through liquor store where you go in and you could buy a drink.
Phoenix, Arizona.
Yeah.
They had drive-through liquor stores.
Yeah.
I was 19.
They would sell you a drink, though. You could go drive-through and order a Manhattan
and
drive off of it.
I took advantage of that.
Jeez. Yes, we've come so far.
I'm glad that they raised you. My son's like, why can't I drink? I'm only 20.
Yeah.
I'm like, you know,
you know what? I'm surprised that they haven't now with marijuana being legal in so many places and, you know, more and more it's becoming, you know, acceptable,
right,
or at least legal. I don't know why somebody doesn't do a drive-through weed store. I mean, I'm sure that at some point, don't you think? I mean, you know.
Well, they got drive-by bikini bistros around here.
Jeez.
And they're right next to the pot shops.
I know they
literally
are. Literally.
Well,
and the massage parlor.
We got about a 5 mile jaunt here between here and Everett.
Oh yeah,
and every other coffee shop is a bikini bistro, and every other shop is a pot shop. I mean, there must be about a dozen or two of them on there.
If you're listening to this from someplace other than Washington State, understand Washington is one of the first states that legalized marijuana. For better or worse, we can't escape it.
That's right.
Hey, that's our cue to hit the gas until New Year's Day. Thanks to Chris Palmer for stopping by and telling us about Hot Wheels. Thanks for liking and following our Facebook page and our website. Merry Christmas to you from Brady Wright, Shane Osborne, and Steve Johann. Keep your eyes on the road, your hands on the wheel, and your foot to the floor. Slide on by next week for another edition of Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust.